The recordings have started. Speakers,
okay.
Begin.
Thank you, and we're being recorded now. So be on your best behavior. Welcome to the first post-summer call of our IGO working group. And any updates to statements of interest? Hearing none, update on recent discussions in the council relating to this. Council had a two-hour call last Thursday. I reported to council, number one, that we had basically been stuck in the mud since Buenos Aires because we couldn't proceed until we had expert legal advice on the accepted scope of sovereign immunity for IGOs, and that we were receiving staff assistance and ICANN financial assistance in that regard, and expected to be able to enter into a contract in the first half of September, but that this would certainly we wouldn't have any, at best we'd be receiving the expert report just before the upcoming meeting in Dublin, so that they shouldn't be expecting any final report from us pre-Dublin. And I also brought them up to date a bit on what had happened in Paris to the extent we understand it, because we have yet to have a call with any of the participants in that Paris meeting, and we have yet to see any specifics of what they are recommending. But I did put the council on notice that there's a possibility of a board GAC staff proposal coming out of that meeting, which could be in conflict with what we eventually recommend when we get to a recommendation. And they were brought up to date on our work. If anyone has questions on council, ask them now. If not, we'll proceed to the main business, which is to review the available legal experts and try to decide on who we should proceed further with.
Bill?
I see a note in chat. It's not a staff proposal. I'm not sure that's... we'll get back to that, Mary. It's certainly not your staff proposal from you or Steve or anyone, but I think there may be some staff assistance in drafting it. I believe the characterization was something that was being prepared with assistance of staff, and I guess... your further comments says there was some input to the group, and Paul asked why it's not being provided to this working group, but let me ask you, Mary, as far as I understand, you have no more idea of exactly what that group is going to propose than we do at this point. Is that correct, or do you have any strong indication of what they're going to come forward with?
Hi, Phil. Hi, everybody. This is Mary from staff. I hope you can all hear me. I'm not on a great connection. To answer your question, Phil, I do know the general principles because these are based largely on the documents that had already been sent and exchanged. I do not know what the substance or the status of the discussions amongst the GAC and the IGO participants are at this point. So I can't, I don't have any further insight as to what the final form of the proposal will look like. And as to Paul's question, as to the information, you know, maybe to clarify, you know, we facilitated the IGO group largely by assisting Chris Despain and Thomas Schneider, and I know, Phil, you want to get to this later. So, like I said in the chat, it was mostly, you know, what was the GNSO's recommendations, what's the status of the board's adoption, what kind of cost considerations would come from that sort of thing. I hope that helps. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Mary, and at least for my part, I certainly hope and I hope ongoing efforts are being made to set up that call with the folks who met in Paris that Petter and I can participate in, so we can have a dialogue with them before they release anything. But I don't think staff should be asked to describe what we're going to get from that group any more than they should be describing the final, what they think the final report from our group will be. So do we have some stuff to share in the Adobe room in terms of the potential legal experts maybe we may be looking toward?
Phil, it's Jim Bykoff.
Yes, Jim.
Let me just say, you and I and Steve exchanged some emails yesterday. I called John Bellinger this morning. Unfortunately, he's in Europe until Monday. I've sent him an email, but I may not hear from him till Monday, at which time I'm going to ask him to give us an estimate. So I don't think we'll have it before, the earliest would be early next week. But in any event, I also wanted to make a comment because...
And he's at Arnold and Porter, is that correct?
Yes. Yes, okay. He is. I also wanted to make a comment because I agree to a large extent with the memo that Paul Keating sent out on Wednesday, last Wednesday, I guess, that I think personally that we should look for the candidate that has the best knowledge to make this kind of an opinion authoritative and then negotiate the amount. I think most of the lawyers we're talking to have room to negotiate, and I think John's among them. And while I don't have a precise estimate, I think that we shouldn't sacrifice quality of the opinion for, price.
Thank you, Jim. I would tend to agree. I let's focus on qualifications today, with the understanding we may not be, and we can maybe decide on more than one we're interested in pursuing further, and then see how they shake out on cost. But we, given the political sensitivity of this issue, we want answers to our questions from someone who has really sterling qualifications and is going to produce a highly credible document that we can rely on. We don't want someone who's going to be learning as they go but already knows this stuff, although they will be dealing perhaps with some questions they haven't encountered before. So let's go. And staff, let me ask you, my recollection was at least two of the candidates were not real experts in international law. Their expertise was more in the IP area. Is that correct? Hello?
Hi,
Steve?
This is Steve. This is Steve from staff. And, yeah, that's correct.
Which were those?
Let's see. David Opterbeck and...
Right.
Dr. Mir Curry are the ones that we considered possibly less qualified to do this.
Yeah, I will say, I reviewed, we don't have them in front of us right now. I don't know if we're going to be able to put up the individual bios of the candidates. But, continuing off Jim's remarks, I don't see any point, unless we hear from others in the working group, of really giving intense review to people who have fine background in intellectual property law, but really very little in international law relating to sovereign immunity of nation states and IGOs. We need people who really know this stuff. So I would suggest that we really not look at Opterbeck or Corey unless someone can make a compelling case for doing so. They just don't have the background that we need. Petter?
Hi, Petter. Petter Info here. I perfectly agree with that. And I have looked at the CV from all the candidates so far. And I really look forward to more information from John Bellinger. So at the point right now, I see two good candidates to choose between. That's David Stewart or John Bellinger. Because as you said, I was also looking for more of people that had some knowledge about international disputes also related to these kind of organizations that we're talking about, more than just general intellectual property, even if that's international. And that's why I saw, I have to admit that I have not studied it for 110% all their CVs, but what I saw with David Stewart was identity with that claims, and also from John Bellinger. So from my point of view, I see those two as the most strongest candidates right now.
Okay, well, thank you, Petter. So we're in agreement, I think, on let's skip the IP experts and go straight to the ones. Staff, do we have the individual, are we able to put up the individual CVs in the chat room for the three remaining candidates?
Hey, Phil, this is Steve. Sorry, I'm on my mobile.
What's that?
Sorry, I think Mary and I are cross talking over each other. This is Steve from staff.
Right.
I just want to say I'm on mobile, so it takes me a little longer to get off on mute here. And I just want to provide a little more context. So we kept the other two candidates that I think we've all agreed are not as qualified as the others. It's mostly for completeness sake, just to allow the group to see the full spectrum of candidates that we have been presented.
Are you suggesting we review OptorDeck and Corey?
No. I'd rather just to say that why they're included, even though, I guess from a staff perspective, we have agreement that they are also, or that we also don't think that they're quite as qualified as the other three.
Well, that they're not as qualified.
Yeah, sure. But like I said, I just wanted to tell you why they're included in the list at all. And that's
well,
your
go
question.
Ahead if you can make it quick, but I really want to get to review of the other three CVs as quickly as possible.
Sure. And to your point about whether or not they can be, the CVs can be put in the AC room, that's correct. I can put any of them up.
Okay.
Any one you want to look at, I can put up.
Okay. So quickly, why were OptorDeck and Corey in the mix?
Like I said, this is Steve again from staff. Like I said, it was just for completeness and transparency that they were in the mix, and that's nothing more to it than that, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, the two vice chairs are in agreement that we needn't spend time looking at their CVs. They just don't have the requisite background. So can we get at least with Bellinger, Stewart, and Feldman, can we get one of those CVs up so we can quickly review it? And I think what I propose is that we do a quick couple of minute review of each CV and then discuss the three remaining candidates among ourselves as to try to get a sense of prioritization in terms of expertise. Okay, here's Mr. Bellinger. He's at Arnold & Porter, a very old and well-known D.C. law firm, for those of you not familiar with it. He was a legal advisor at the Department of State for 4 years. That would have been under the George W. Bush administration, and also was at the White House under Bush's first term, and advised the president, cabinet officials, and national security advisor, and NSD staff, and he's also senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a very prestigious group in the foreign policy field. You can see his expertise. It's very wide-ranging on a great many issues of international law, and he continues to provide counsel in that area. And what impressed me is this next-to-last sentence. He has extensive experience in U.S. foreign relations litigation involved in the Alien Tort Statute, Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, which are relevant U.S. laws, but generally on the immunities of foreign governments and government officials, and recognition and enforcement of foreign judgments, which would get into the litigation area, which is relevant to our the issue we're grappling with, which is the right of appeal to a court of national jurisdiction. So he seems quite well qualified to me, and there's more going on here. So I'll stop there. Anyone have one or two quick comments on Mr. Bellinger before we move on to the next candidate? And then, of course, we'll discuss all three at the end.
Pat, I had a quick comment.
Yes.
This looks good. Looking good.
Yeah, I mean, this guy advised the president and the National Security Agency on international law. So you certainly dealt with this at the highest level in the United States. Was that Steve or Jim?
Oh, it was Jim. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Go ahead. I was done.
Okay, I was just going to say that I talked to John two or three times, specifically about the issues that we're looking at, and I think it's accurate to say that he feels very comfortable with providing an opinion on this type of issue because he has worked on issues involving both IGOs and governments on sovereign immunity. That's it.
Okay. Well, that's also very helpful to know, and also strengthens his credentials. Okay. Next, Mr. Debevoise. All right. He does have background in international arbitration and multi-jurisdictional litigation. He's also at Arnold and Porter, like our first candidate. Background in financial transactions, trade liberalization. He's got a fine resume, but not that. Why is he okay? Yeah, I don't see him as being particularly well qualified. Certainly not in contrast to Bellinger. Any comments on that? So let's move on to the next one. Okay, Mr. Stewart, he's at the Georgetown University Law Center, which is not in Georgetown, but near Capitol Hill, for a well-regarded law school. He's been teaching there since 2008 on public and private international law, foreign relations law, treaties, immunities under an international law, co-director of the Global Law Scholars Program, faculty advisor for the International Law Society and the International Arbitration Society. Previously at another program at Georgetown on the Inter-American Judicial Committee, did work with the Organization for American States. Previous work before Georgetown was just over 30 years as Office of Legal Advisor for the U.S. State Department, where he dealt with private international law, diplomatic law and litigation, international claims and investment disputes, dealt with Iranian claims. That must have been interesting. And UN affairs. Also, I guess he taught, he lectured at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies, has impressive educational background, including both law school and the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, has written a bunch of treatises on international law, including Bench Book on Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, a guide for judges for the Federal Judicial Center, and also Digest of U.S. Practice in International Law. And I assume he would know how that differs from practice in other nations. Then there's a long list of professional activities and memberships. I think, this is also an impressive resume and certainly someone that, in my view, we should, keep in the running along with Mr. Bellinger. Any quick comments on that? All right, I think we have one more CV to look at, which is a Mr. Feldman. I would also say while we're waiting for that, one advantage of hiring someone based in Washington is that at least one of your co-chairs could rather easily sit down and have a or pick up the phone and have a readily have a conversation with those two folks if one of them is the one we contract with. Okay, and all right. So, Mr. Feldman, this is a little different structured. This CV is expertise, public international law and foreign sovereign immunity. Was at the State Department for 16 years. Has been in private practice since. Focused on international arbitration, counseling corporations on immunity, and international dispute resolution. Has counseled governments and corporations. Was also a legal advisor at the Department of State. Worked on the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, which is the relevant U.S. statute in this area, and so in terms of knowing U.S. law. He considered the privileges and immunities of IGOs while drafting the FSIA and after its enactment. Also involved with U.S. Iran claims, as was our previous candidate. And brings up the International Organization Immunities Act of 1945. Which I don't remember seeing a reference to that prior to this. He advises clients on immunity issues, including claims against foreign states and government agencies, and testifies as an expert witness for a whole bunch of major corporations, has testified before Congress on the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act several times, before the House and Senate Judiciary Committees, and has published a number of articles on the same subject area. So I'm not sure if he's quite as strong as the other two candidates, but he's certainly qualified. Can we get back to the original chart that showed where they fit in the money scheme? Although I tend to agree with Jim in that I think that this project, that someone with real expertise in this area is not going to have to take that much time answering our questions. I think they will not be completely novel concepts to them, and I don't know what their billing rate is, but given that this is for a dealing with a particularly sensitive issue for a nonprofit corporation in the internet area, both as to accommodate the nonprofit nature of this, as well as the fact that it may be novel to apply these concepts to internet activities, we may be able to catch a break from them in terms of hours billed and hourly billing rate, or maybe they'll just give us a flat project rate that's within our budget. So looking at the, we don't know Mr. Bellinger, what he would be willing to do this for. Mr. Stewart was regarded as within budget. Mr. Feldman was regarded as likely above budget. That was a staff evaluation. Can I ask either Mary or Steve to advise us how they reached the characterization of being within or likely beyond budget for the two candidates where we have a cost estimate?
Hey, Phil. This is Steve from staff.
Hey, Steve.
So, you know, we have a budget number that we have to work with. So we're still obviously keeping that close to the vest for now. So the evaluations were based on their preliminary pricing, which are obviously negotiable to a degree. But I would say that for Feldman, where we have the $3 sign, which I guess is kind of like TripAdvisor, it's that in that particular case, it's a magnitude of 3 to 4 times our budget. So while I can't give you exact numbers, I can tell you that it's obviously up to the working group to make the selection. It's that there's repercussions to picking some of these. For instance, Feldman, where it could prove very difficult to negotiate that much downwards. It would actually fit into our budget. So hopefully that's helpful.
Okay, and we're going to have to. I'm going to take Petter's question in 1 minute or his remarks. I respect your desire to keep the budget figure provided by ICANN under wraps for now, though at some point soon we're going to have to be talking actual dollars. Is there any flexibility on ICANN's part if given the importance of getting expert advice for this working group to function? If we had to go somewhat higher, is there any flexibility? Or are you unable to state that at this time?
Hey, Phil, it's Steve again. I think we'd have to look into that. At this point, not at this time, I guess, is the way to put it. So if we did have to go back and find more money, it would require that conversation with
Okay. Well, let's see how this proceeds. I see hands up now from Petter, and I keep seeing Paul's hand up and then down, so I'm not sure if Paul wants to be. Let me call on Petter, and then we'll see who else wants to jump in on this discussion. And Petter, go ahead, and then I'd like a more general discussion on how the group thinks we should proceed with the three candidates we've identified as having very relevant and strong expertise. Petter?
Yeah, Petter. I may make a combination of my question and what George and Paul also asked. My question is, did you just practically ask them what they would charge for this project or for a budget without stating any ICANN budget for this project? And also, did you indicate or did they indicate an hourly rate or for a full price for the full work, so to speak? Thanks.
This is Steve from staff again. Let's see, for Stuart, he provided an hourly rate as well as an expected time frame to be able to complete the work, you know, which equals a total amount, which ended up, without negotiation, being within budget. For Mr. Feldman, it was a flat fee. Which I would actually also note that his email that accompanied his CV, he noted that it would be difficult for him to be able to answer questions, I believe, 2 and 3. So I guess I would note that while his fee is higher, he also would have difficulty answering all the questions fully. So hopefully that's helpful. Thanks.
Well, that's an important detail to know.
Yeah, agreed. That's very important detail. There's no point hiring someone who doesn't think they can provide answers to our all of our questions. Okay. And George had asked in the chat room, what's our time frame? I think our time frame is, as I understand, is that we're hoping to have once an agreement is signed, a retainer agreement, to have answers to our questions back within 1 month. In other words, 4 weeks, which, again, someone with really high-level expertise in this area, that should be a reasonable amount of time. You know, we don't know what the rest of their workload is, but, you know, I think we're looking at, you know, I don't want to betray since I know the budget figure, but I think we're talking about probably 10 hours of work at an average billing rate that seems reasonable, which, again, I forget how many questions we have, but I think it's quite doable for someone. This is not going to be a big profit center for whoever they hire. It's going to be more the fact that they get to provide input to on an issue of first impression of how to apply these international law principles to the Internet and domain name system. And I think someone had asked, I think Paul, whether any of these folks have ever done any work under contract to ICANN before. I don't believe they have, but can the staff know that? Okay. Steve said no. None have worked with ICANN before. So whether you think that would be a positive or a negative, it's not applicable. How does the group, based on what we've heard, does the group believe we should follow up with Bellinger, Stewart, and Feldman, or based on the fact that Feldman has stated a very high estimate for what it would cost, and has also told staff he's not sure he could answer several of the questions, should we drop him from consideration and just focus on Bellinger and Stewart? Peter?
Well, I suggest that we focus on Bellinger and Stewart, and both because, as I said, I see those two as the best candidates, and I'm very interested to see what we can also get from Bellinger when it comes to costs and so. And also looking at the time frame, I would be happy to, if we could have the report from the expert we choose ready to discuss in Dublin, as I certainly hope that we also would have on that table the expert report, as well as at least some kind of follow-up from GAC and IGOs, so that we can have a more workable meeting with news to proceed from. Thanks.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It would be highly desirable to have this memo from whoever's retained as a legal expert in hand by the time we get to Dublin. That is going to be challenging. Let's say, well, today is the 9th. Let's say we could hire someone by the end of next week, which I think is the most expedited time frame. I'm not sure that's realistic. That would 4 weeks from next Friday is the Friday, the day before the council meetings start in Dublin. So we're talking about a very quick turnaround. So I think when we follow up with Bellinger and Stewart, we have to be very specific about whether they believe they can deliver a report to us by the week of October 12th, which is about 4 weeks if they're retained next week. Yeah, George just asked, does ICANN have a policy that documents should be posted? I think that's, I don't know, but this is, you know, this is not a you know, draft PDP or issues report or something like that. This is a document for the use of this working group, and I think the working group, I'm not sure what we're going to do meeting in Dublin if we don't have this document by then, other than to discuss whatever we get from the Paris group, assuming we get something in writing by then, although we can't really have an informed response to that until we know, have our own advice on the accepted scope of immunity for IGOs. So I'm not sure that would apply to this situation. Yeah, and Mary, back me up, that's for documents intended for community review, not working group documents. Where are we? It's 12:41. We have 19 minutes left. Let me make a draft proposal, since I don't see any hands up or hear any voices. Why don't we instruct staff to prepare a identical follow-up letters for both Mr. Bellinger and Mr. Stewart, informing them that we have we welcome their interest in this project, we have reviewed their qualifications and believe they're highly qualified and could provide us with the critical information that we need, and ask them if they feel confident they could respond to all the questions we've posed. Ask them for a firm estimate of, you know, hopefully they can give us a flat fee for this project. They know exactly what it is and can pretty well estimate how much time it's going to take them to answer. I don't think it's going to take any new research by either of them, given their expertise. Ask them if they can provide us either with a flat rate for the entire project or their hourly rate and an estimate of how many hours they would need and whether that hourly rate represents any discount from their normal rate given the novel question posed here, the exposure they're going to get, and the fact that ICANN's a nonprofit organization and is the one who's going to be paying for this. And most important, whether they think when they think they can complete the project, and in particular, can they complete it by the week of October 12th, so we have the memo in hand prior to the start of the Dublin meeting. How does that sound as a proposal, and does anybody think I've missed any points that should be in that in such a letter?
Well,
Sounds fine to me, Phil. Jim Bykoff.
Okay, thank you, Jim. And I'm seeing in the chat room, Paul Keating first said they thought Feldman might give a more thoughtful approach, but then asked if he was the one who said he couldn't, may not be able to respond to all the questions. Yes, Paul, he's the one who was both quite expensive in his estimate and not sure if he could even provide all the answers we're looking for. Petter, is your hand still up, or is that...
No, it's still up again.
Okay.
I think it's a good suggestion, also that we need, if it's possible, to have all information, especially when it comes to John Bellinger, as soon as possible by next week. I don't know if it's possible to for us to have the final information to make an online decision or vote by next Friday, but it seems that somewhere around that will be necessary to have the expert to start the work, so he will have the possibility to get a report to us before Dublin. I don't know if, yes, Mary, I see your hands up. I hope you have a clear reply on that.
Phil, may I?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So, Petter, I guess, in terms of the timing before Dublin, Phil had already given that indication that it could be challenging because obviously there are contracting and requisition processes that internally we have to go through before whoever it is, is formally on board and able to start billing their time to us. Obviously, I think in the letter that Phil mentioned, the sort of need for speed, if you like, will be highlighted so that, they can provide their estimate of when they can get back to us, as noted by Phil. So in this regard, and in regard to your earlier question, one suggestion that we would have as staff is that if the working group agrees that we would proceed with either Mr. Bellinger or Professor Stewart, assuming they're still available, that the two chairs, that would be you and Phil Petter, could make a preliminary decision and communicate that to the working group via email. We don't think that it would need a vote, and it may be something that can go quickly if we have you guys, having looked at it, make a proposal to the working group as to which you think of the two might be better or more appropriate for the job.
Okay. Mary, let me ask you this. Let's say, staff has a draft letter for us to look at by tomorrow. Petter and I okay it, and we send it out Friday, and we ask the recipients to respond by next Friday, the 18th, which gives them, assuming they get it Friday, gives them a week to respond, which seems, given... That seems achievable. If we get that response by the 18th and Petter and I, with the concurrence of the working group, through email, get agreement on who the preferred candidate is, assuming both fit within the budget, and assuming they both fit within budget, so there's no need to go back and try to negotiate with ICANN to get more money, How much time does that final contracting phase take? Once we say, okay, we've got someone, we want to hire X, he's willing to do it within budget, how much time are we talking about?
Hi, everybody. This is Mary again. And Steve and I were actually discussing this, and because we were not on the operational side, we don't know exactly or specifically. We do know that, as with, I guess every other corporation, that, the internal processes would involve inputting into the system and, getting out some kind of contract. So what we can do is two things. We can certainly check, you know, what typically for presumably either an individual or a law firm type of contractor, how long that normally takes. And we can certainly work with our colleagues internally who deal with this to try to make sure that goes to the top of the pile as much as possible. But that's as much as I know for now.
Okay. So you're not sure. Are we talking, do you think, about days, weeks, a month? I mean, do you have any sense of that?
You know, to be honest, I really don't know. I would imagine and hope that it's certainly not a month. I think some of it depends on how many of these, requests are going through the system and being processed by whoever it is that deals with these things internally in our departments. So I can't answer that, but like I said, I think what Steve and I can undertake to do certainly is not just find out the typical period, but really to try to push that as far up the priority line as we have any ability or influence to do.
Okay. Let me ask this. First order of business is draft up a letter to the candidates. Once that's done, if you could reach out to the people who involved with that approval process and give them a heads up that we expect to have settled on an expert within the next week or so and need to enter into a contract as expeditiously as possible, get some feedback on what kind of timeline we're looking at, if you could, and just inform the working group by email. Is that a reasonable request?
Very, and we can certainly do that. Thanks, Phil.
Okay.
Phil, I've got to get off. I have another meeting,
Jim.
I have to run to. So it's Jim Bykoff. I'll follow up with John on Monday and tell him to expect the letter, I guess, next week.
Yeah, he may be getting it by Monday, or even it may go out this Friday and be waiting for him on
okay.
his return.
Sounds good.
In fact, he may have it before his return. I assume that... Do we send these letters, Mary and Steve, by snail mail, or do we send them by email to these candidates?
I guess Steve is on mute still, but I would imagine that for something like this, email, unless anyone has
yeah.
any reason to think we need to do it differently, would be the best. We could certainly follow up by snail mail if somebody thought that was appropriate.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask one question here. I saw in the chat, Paul, you had some positive things to say about Mr. Feldman. I'm not sure he's going to pan out based on ability to answer our questions and price. Do you feel strongly about including him at least to get a letter to give him a chance to tell us flat out that what his price is and whether or not he can answer our questions? It sounds like he's going to be above the range by a substantial amount and may not be confident in his ability to satisfy our questions, but there's no harm in asking him to respond other than the additional few minutes it would take to review his answer. So you could let us know, Paul, whether it's important for you that he be sent a letter as well. And I see your answer depends on how important the questions were. I think they're all important. I don't see any point in my personal view is there's no point hiring an expert who can't answer all our questions and we don't know how important they are until we see the answers. They may be more important than we thought when we came up with them, or they may not be that important. But we need solid answers. All right. Well, let me, Paul says defer to the group. I'm going to ask for a show of the hands. Let me ask, I'm trying to see how to frame the question. if you think we should, for the sake of completeness, in knowing that he may not be in the mix, that it appears at this stage that he's above the price range and may lack the ability to answer our questions, is there anyone who, here's the question, should, for the sake of completeness, should we send a third letter, to the same letter to Mr. Feldman that Mr. Bellinger and Stewart are going to be getting in recognition of his important role in drafting the Foreign Sovereignty and Immunity Act for the sake of completeness? So if you think, just to be complete, it would be worthwhile to ask him to send a letter to him as well as to the other two, please raise your hand now. And I see, so far I see no hands up. Well, I see Paul's hand up. All right, let me flip it around. Given what we know now, please, and take your hand down now, Paul, I'm going to ask a new question. If you think it would just be superfluous to send that letter to Mr. Feldman and that we shouldn't bother, put your hand up now to see if we have strong opposition to sending a letter. And I see no hands on that. So I get the feeling the group's rather indifferent. The group thinks it's probably not going to pan out for Feldman, but no one strongly objects to sending that letter to him and making sure we're not dismissing him prematurely. So I'm going to ask my co-chair, Petter, do you have any objection? You know, I think for the sake of completeness, maybe we send the letter to him, even though we think it's not going to work out for Feldman. Are you okay with that?
Well, Petter, I'm okay with that, just so that we can send out three letters. But I think it's, okay, the costs can probably be further discussed, but what I'm a little bit afraid of is the time limit. Someone that says that he may need some extra time because he can't make the original reply to all our questions. So, but just so that we can say that we have, frankly, asked and sent out further questions and information to three candidates, okay. But I don't really see him as one of the real candidates for this.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, but I, again, I don't see any harm in asking him. And if nothing else, we get it in writing. It's not just a conversation he had with staff. I think it has some merit in terms of nailing things down and creating a written record. And I was thinking while you were asking, one thing that the letter should ask is whether the person, the expert, believes he can answer the questions on the basis of current knowledge. We'll need to do any substantial additional research, which, of course, will extend the time and run up the cost. I think we're in agreement. We want staff to draft up a letter to send to those three individuals. Hopefully we can see that by close of business tomorrow, let the working group review it, and finalize it Friday, and maybe ideally get it out before the weekend. It's not that complicated, the kind of letter we're talking about. It just covers a few points. As for next steps, we may need a... I don't know if we're going to have any... until we have a response from these experts, and I don't see any point to holding another call, and I'm not sure we're going to have a response if they get a letter late Friday or Monday... or on Monday, especially with Mr. Bellinger just getting back to Washington on Monday. I'm not sure we're going to have answers by late Tuesday, which we would need to discuss Wednesday. So I don't see any need to schedule a call next Wednesday. Does anyone have different views on that at this point in time? You know, unless certainly if in the next 48 hours, early next week, we get something in writing from the Paris group, then it would be a good idea to have a call. But I don't see any reason to put one on the calendar as of now. Petter?
I agree. And maybe we and the staff could use the time in between to work for this follow-up meeting with the IGO's representatives and so, and with GAC, so that we at least can get some further inputs from them to report to the full working group. But I fully agree that at least next week, and we'll see how it is the week after that. I see no reason to take all of our time when we don't have any news to discuss.
Okay, and I want to just add to that and give the group notice right now that the two Wednesdays after that, I will be unavailable for a call. Wednesday the 23rd is Yom Kippur, which is the holiest day of the Jewish year. While I'm not particularly observant, that is a day on which I do not work, if nothing else, out of respect for my fellow Jews. So I could not be on a call on the 23rd. On the 30th, at the time of the call, I'll be in an airport getting ready to fly back from a meeting to Washington. So if we do, we may have to schedule the call. If we need a call in those 2 weeks, we may have to try to schedule at a different time. If it's urgent, possibly you could proceed with just Petter chairing, and I'd read the transcript, or we could try to get work done by email rather than a call. But I wanted to give everybody advance notice of my inability to be at on phone calls the last two Wednesdays of this month. It's 101, so unless Petter, do you have further comment here? Last comment? I see your hand up. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
So I think we're done, and we look forward to receiving a draft letter to the three remaining candidates from staff, hopefully by close of business tomorrow, and we'll turn that around quickly with the aim of sending that out either on Friday or on next Monday and moving this process forward as rapidly as possible. So with that, I'm going to bring the call to the close and thank everyone for their attendance and their input.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Tori. You may now stop the recording. This concludes today's call. Thank you ever so much.